This is day three of the new year. And if you listen closely, you will hear the sound of things breaking. And that sound is coming from all of the 2016 New Year's resolutions breaking into thousands and thousands of pieces. Oh, we all want a new start, don't we? The things about ourselves that we would like to change. I want to eat healthier, exercise more, eat kale 3 days a week, eat ice cream once on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. I resolve to not become so agitated when I'm stuck driving behind that person driving 10 miles an hour under the speed limit. I promise I will be nice and respectful to that pain in the pew on the other side of the church. No, I'm not thinking about you, Lori. Of course not. Yeah, you work it out, ladies. And while all of these intentions are always laudable, they seldom stick. The New Year's inspires a hope for a new start. Out with the old blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. My one vice is procrastination. And I think I will write procrastination in big letters on the top of the page and put number one, I will not procrastinate on major projects. Number two, I'll leave that blank. Number three, I'll work on the rest later. Isn't that how it is with us? Now think back to when the Cleveland Indians had a very long dry spell before winning the World Series. And hallelujah, that day finally came, and so naturally, the Indians fans were looking forward to another great year. But they were sorely disappointed because the Indians got off to a terrible, pitiful start. Five games, five losses. And one disgruntled fan was so upset that he climbed the flagpole at Cleveland's Memorial Stadium and he vowed not to come down until the Indians won a game. But he had to come down because the streak lasted for 11 games. Now, those of you who know baseball will know the name Bill Veeck. He was Cleveland's manager at the time, and he was notorious for staging stunts to get the attention of his team and to kind of relieve the frustration of the fans. And Veeck decided he was going to work on Cleveland's winless record by declaring another opening day. The brass band was back. The mayor threw out the second first pitch. All of the rituals of the first opening day were done on the second. And finally, at long last, the Indians won the 12th game. Wouldn't it be something if we could all proclaim another opening day? We could get rid of the red ink on our files by this declaring, now hold on a minute. I'm starting all over. Isn't that what we all want? A chance to clean the slate and become better people. But the Apostle Paul has reminded us in this text that becoming a new creation takes far more than hanging the 2016 calendar on the nail in the wall. And part of the problem with resolutions is that we treat them as solos and not ensembles. You've heard me say before that you cannot make a new you with only you. A gentleman named Roger Schellenberg put it like this: I got myself into this mess, so why should you trust me to get myself out? The only way I know to be better is with your help. And few people understood this better than the Apostle Paul. I want you to listen again to his words from Romans, but this time from the Message. I am full of myself, after all, because I've spent a long time in sin's prison. What I don't understand about myself is that I decide one way, but then act another, doing the things I absolutely despise. So if I can't be trusted to figure out what is best for me and then do it, then it becomes obvious that God's command for me is necessary. You see, Paul understood that he couldn't go solo. Help was absolutely necessary. For we know, don't we, that we can intend to be better. We can intend to do what's right and not do it. We can try not to repeat old behaviors, but then go right on doing them. Shrug our shoulders and say, oh, I tried Weight Watchers. I bought a Nordic track. I took behavior modification classes. I read the Upper Room every day now, but at the end of the day, it's often the same old story. Same old you. Now, you will notice in today's text that Paul does not speak in past tense. He doesn't say, well, I used to have this problem, but not any longer. No, with humility, he acknowledged his struggle to bring about lasting change on his own. In deep humility, Paul, the first and probably greatest missionary in the history of the church, Paul, its first and perhaps greatest theologian, acknowledged that he simply did not know how to put his own house in order. You know, people outside the church have this mistaken idea that Christianity is just one big New Year's resolution. Being a Christian means keeping the rules. But I've yet to meet a person who was very successful at self-improvement simply by opening the checkbook every day and putting check, check, check beside all the things they were supposed to do. You know, Jesus preached against that kind of perversion of Judaism that made it a rule-regulated religion. Following God back then for the common person was no delight. It was an ordeal. It was a 10-ton obligation. Okay, people, let's work hard on the cleanliness laws this week. And when you come back to temple next week, we're going to work on memorizing the hierarchy of sins. Always something to do. Always something that you realize that you can't do. I knew a man who had been in the church all of his life, and perhaps most of them reluctantly. He understood the faith as rules. That's what his parents had taught him. Unfortunately, that's what the church had taught him. He did everything right. And yet there was one thing he had not done. He had not made his profession of faith through baptism. And everybody kept saying, what are you waiting on? Why aren't you baptized? And he would always say, I am not ready yet. And as I got to know him, I realized that not ready yet was code for I'm not worthy. I am not good enough. I do not measure up. I tried the best I could to explain that baptism is not for those who have accrued enough points. Baptism is not for those who are all together. It's precisely because we are not altogether, precisely because that thing called sin guides our lives. It's because of that that we simply open ourselves to the means of grace that Jesus has given us. He thought he could get there if he would just try a little bit harder. And I can sympathize with his thinking. You know, if something is not working, what do? We try harder. If at first you don't succeed, blah, blah, blah. Paul doubled down, doing everything according to the book. He called himself the Jew's Jew. He knew the Torah forward and backward. He knew every jot and tittle of it. There was just one hitch. He couldn't will himself to be good. He couldn't make New Year's resolution. He says, I know the law, I just can't do it. A school principal in one of the churches I serve read this interesting piece during a church board retreat. She used it to illustrate our flawed thinking that we can make things work out that have long outlived their usefulness. If we just keep repeating them often enough, then we'll get it right. Which goes along with Einstein saying that many of you know that the definition of insanity is doing the same things over and over again and expecting to get a different result. The premise of this is that if you are riding a dead horse, you should do the following. Try riding the dead horse for longer periods of time in hopes of going further. Appoint a committee to study the dead horse and offer recommendations. Move the dead horse to a new location and try again. Ask for funding to support dead horses. Harness several dead horses together for increased speed. Or, I like this one, arrange a visit to other sites to see how they ride dead horses. You know, if something isn't working, why do we keep on doing it? Because no amount of blood, sweat, and tears, no amount of retooling, rehearsing, rehashing, redefining, or repetition will yield a different result. Only feelings of guilt. And only this overpowering feeling that, once again, you have been defeated. Following Jesus is not a resolution. Following Jesus means being faithful to his way, any way we can, every day of our lives. And more often than not, that faithfulness can be expressed in some very simple but meaningful ways. I was waiting with my mother one Tuesday afternoon as the nurse was preparing to give her yet another chemotherapy treatment. And while I was sitting with her in that suite that was full of people receiving the same thing, in walks this cheery, smiling man carrying two big boxes of donuts. He knew the staff by name, even knew some of the patients. And he went around to each one, offering them a donut and a God bless you, and doing what he could to simply be present in a simple way to the patients or their families who happened to be there. When I asked one of the nurses why he did that, she said, I don't have any idea. We never asked why. And so I asked him, why? Well, he said, it's very simple, really. He said, this is what Jesus calls me to do. And I've discovered something in the process, that in the process of being kind to these people, I have changed myself. I have changed because I've gotten outside of myself and am focused upon the needs of others. You know, too often we think that following Jesus has to be a production, when so often it's doing the ordinary things. Letting somebody in line ahead of you at the checkout counter, smiling and greeting a stranger who seems down, refraining from criticizing another, even if the criticism is justified, deferring attention from yourself so that others may be praised, spending quality time with someone who's going through a painful period, or if you are like Pat Fair, engaging people in conversations at Walmart, or I would add whatever store you choose. Great importance is attached to little deeds. They are the stuff of which change happens, maybe in another person, but certainly the way change will happen for each of us. You know, there are some people who change because they have had a powerful, knock-down spiritual encounter with God, but for most of us, it's not nearly as dramatic. Becoming new creations in Christ is being a daily follower of Christ in our daily decision. Jesus talked about appearances, because so often our resolutions seem to center around that. We're going to improve the way we look. I'm going to get six-pack abs. I'm going to get some guns. I got more chins than the Chinese phone book. I'm going to get rid of a couple of them. You know how it goes. It's all about appearances. But Jesus talked about the Pharisees parading around in front of others. But God saw behind it all. He knew that it was all smoke and mirrors. Because change that matters, folks, isn't cosmetic. Every time you consciously decide to follow Jesus, you're not necessarily changing the outward you, but the inner person. Change is seldom in a straight line. We step up, we slide back. And so our brother Paul said, "Help, can't do it. I can decide not to sin, but I do it anyway. Can anybody do something for me?" And the answer is no. Not just anybody, but somebody. Capital S, somebody. So Paul came to realize, what I can't do, Christ can. I could not save myself, so he did. Let me tell you a story about a man who had been a neurotic for most of his life. He said, "I was anxious and depressed and selfish, and everyone kept telling me I've got to change. And I agreed with them. But at the same time, I resented them. And what hurt most of all is when my best friend told me, 'You're going to have to change.' But I told him, 'Look, I want to do that, but I can't do it, regardless of how many times I've tried.' I told him how that makes me feel, totally powerless and trapped. And then one day, my friend came to me and he said, 'Don't change. I love you just the way you are.' And he says, 'Those words were music to my ears. Don't change. I love you as you are.' And I relaxed and I came alive. And suddenly, almost imperceptibly, I changed. Now I know that I really couldn't change until I found someone who loved me. So let me say to you that regardless of how many resolutions you have made and broken, Realize that a new start has absolutely nothing to do with January 1st or with willpower, but it has everything to do with being loved. I thank you, kind sir. If I'd been bright enough, I would have realized I have one under here already. I'd be a two-fisted drinker this morning. It's pretty bad when you have to drink a drink before the last sentence of your sermon. Nothing to do with January 1st. Nothing to do with willpower. But everything to do with being loved. And allowing the one who loves you most to do just that. Questions?